and play with the boys and girls. You can't do that now. Haven't you heard? The streets that used to be filled with love. All you hear by now is blood. Oh, Lord. We didn't have to worry about all we worried about.
Yes. All that you seem to be hearing about right now is about blood. Blood in the streets. A young man celebrated his 29th birthday yesterday by shooting and killing three police officers in Baton Rouge and injuring and wounding three others, and was quite deliberate about it, in his mind quite rational about it, and said that this is all on him. And yet, it seemed so confluent with the insanity that we seem to be enveloped by in this time. We have so much happening here in the United States and outside of the borders of the United States. We had over the weekend that attempted coup in Turkey, where now we're pushing toward almost 8,000 people arrested in the aftermath, and a promise by the target of this coup attempt, President Erdogan, to just be so ruthless about rooting out what he calls this virus that has spread within his government. So we could expect that on the heels of this attempted coup that he put down, he and loyalists and the people put down, is going to be some really serious consequences coming behind that. Back in the United States, we had today the fourth, and he is the highest level official, if you will, the highest level police officer in the Freddie Gray case in Baltimore, being acquitted of all charges in the death of Freddie Gray. He's the fourth police officer who has escaped any culpability in Freddie Gray's death, which officially was ruled a homicide by the medical examiner. We can expect that there will be a fallout from this ruling today. And there are so many other things that are happening that should be disturbing, and you get a sense, you know, how you get a sense of a storm brewing. And in the middle of all of this, we have the duopoly preparing for its semifinals in the form of national conventions that would be held in Cleveland for the Republicans and in Philadelphia for the Democrats in this month of July, which will then officially anoint a standard bearer for the respective parties, who will then go on to contest in the general elections in November. And there are questions about that. According to recent polls, I'm not a poll person myself, but it's interesting. A recent poll shows that the electorate can't stand either of the presumptive nominees. They can't stand Donald Trump, and they can't stand Hillary Clinton. And there hasn't been a time since polls have been done that this is the dilemma. where the candidates representing the duopoly are so odious, they're so reviled by the electorate. And yet, things are proceeding according to plan. There will be nominees, and there will be a contest, and one of the two reviled candidates will emerge as President of the United States, barring some incredible miracle that something extraordinary happens and there is an alternative to this kind of electoral madness. So I plowed myself into the business of preparing a program today. And no matter how I tried, I just couldn't see that we could tackle all of these subjects in one program today. So I decided we will scuttle that format. And instead of doing a program, or presuming to do a program that will deal with only a chunk of all of these things, we just have the whole week as a kind of Free Your Mind Friday concept extended throughout the week, because we have a lot to talk about. And I really do want to encourage us to talk about these things. We have some really serious issues on the horizon. They have happened, but other things are going to come right after that as the natural consequences of these tragedies that we've experienced collectively in the past week. And we have to brace ourselves for what's to come. But most importantly, maybe we still have an opportunity here to not only get a fix on what the issues and problems are, but perhaps also to find a way out, to get some clarity. Remember, we talked a lot about clarity, how important it is to have clarity about where we are and why we are where we are. So that's what we'll do today and for the rest of the week. We'll be talking about these issues because they can't really be done in an hour. We have to extend the time and give the space for a kind of a free flow of ideas and opinions. And I'm also going to try today, from time to time, to link up callers with each other and have them carry on this conversation with us listening. What are people talking about? What is important to talk about? How are they seeing things? What sense are you making of this reality that we're sharing? What do you see? And what do you see as a way to deal with it, to cope with it? And so I will open up the phone lines at 888-874-4888. And let's really hunker down and talk about this, not just this past week, but what is likely to happen, what is likely to be the consequence or the consequences of this past week. Where are we on this political spectrum now? Where are we? What choices do we have? We have a total capitulation of Bernie Sanders, but yet, is that the end? Is there something else that could be done between now and November to pay some kind of respect to these 13 million plus votes that he will just hand to the Democratic Party? Is that the end of the so-called Bernie Sanders revolution? Or is there something else that we can do? We have to admit certain things as well. We can't pretend that we are immune to the consequences of these things. We can't pretend that it is something happening outside of our arena. We have to have some kind of way to make some sense of it. So rather than just confine all of this into 1 hour's worth of programming, let's do some talking. 888-874-4888, and Ethan from Brooklyn gets us started. Hello, Ethan.
Hi, Eutrice and PRN family. How are you?
Fine, thank you, and thank you for greeting everyone.
It's been a while since you and I have spoken. I don't even know where to begin. I mean, one of the first things that comes to my mind about what's happening here is there's just massive head-in-the-sand behavior regarding, you know, the chicken-and-the-egg question here about what's fueling this. You know, they want to attach all of these they want to attach the reaction by a few, you know, the killing of a couple of these officers to the protest. And no one is really, well, I should say the general media take on it is, oh, you know, police need to be made safe. They need to feel good. They need to feel, and that's the only narrative you hear. And no one's addressing the idea or, you know, no one's addressing the big elephant in the room. It's like, when does accountability apply to some police officer that's just done the wrong thing? You know, it just seems to be this permanent discussion that, oh yeah, all, you know, it could just go that way. It's just, you know, even when the president was talking and the families were asking questions of him, that question was carefully vetted away from that whole situation. And it's just sad that, I guess it's not sad, it's to be expected that we can't expect those who orchestrate all of this to see right through it, because they're just focused on doing wrong.
Okay. Well, I agree with you about the fact that there is a kind of head in the sand and a one-dimensional way of seeing what the situation is. What then, in your view, is the problem?
At a base, it starts, this is how I see it, I don't see it any other way, it's the sinful heart of man at work. That's, you know, If you just look at everything everywhere, there's a mankind's desire to think that there's no higher power than himself, and so whatever he wants to do, he can do whenever he wants to do it, however he wants to do it, and then whoever's in control, they control the narrative and the storyline, and they ignore their own culpability in a situation and act like, well, when there's a response to the things that you've done, oh, these people are wrong. So, you know, so again, that's another part of the prideful, sinful heart of man at work.
Let me ask you, Ethan, do you recognize that the police, law enforcement, is an extension of the authority and power of the state, and therefore, it's actually a military military branch of the government and the way things are done to control and maintain law and order in our society. So let me ask. Here's what I'm going to do. There's Byron from Queens. Byron, I think you've heard some of what Ethan has said. What is the question that you have for Ethan based on what he said?
Well, I basically didn't get to hear all of what he said, so if you guys could briefly repeat it, I would love to weigh in.
Okay.
Well, in brief, I'll just say, in brief, she was asking... You know, how do I see the situation? My basic premise is that the authorities and people in control have their head in the sand. They're looking at this whole dynamic from a one-sided view, and I attribute all of this back to basically the simple heart of man just continuing to do what he does without any regard for, you know, doing anything right, but just continues to just operate in this evil capacity. That's the brief.
Okay. Thank you, Ethan, and good talking to you again, Eutrice. It's been a few years since we got to talk to each other.
Thank you. So what are you asking Ethan today?
Well, I don't know what I would ask Ethan other than to say that have other people noticed that when many of these things happen and they initially report it one way, it turns out being not the way they initially reported, and they go on like the next day or two. Like, for instance, yesterday when I first got the reports of the shootings, there were three people involved, and then when it comes out today, it was only one person involved. I think that these people know more than they're letting on. Somebody like Trump might not know what's going on because he doesn't seem to be well informed, but many of the other people who are involved in government, people who are involved in these systems that Eutrice talks about all the time, I believe they absolutely know what's going on, and I believe a lot of this is being stoked. There are people who are angry and frustrated and have these weapons that they shouldn't have, and they're being pushed to commit these acts, or they're being guided to commit these acts and form a problem. And this is happening all over the world, by the way. This isn't just happening here in the United States. It's happening all over. That's the way I see it, Ethan. I don't know.
Okay. I don't disagree with you. What's happening here does seem to reek of a somewhat of a choreography, Manchurian candidate type of scenario. Eutrice, you just mentioned a minute ago, you asked if I recognize the government's control, these apparatus, and the police are a military extension. And yes, I would say to even what Byron was just saying, that what we are hearing, what we're seeing is definitely an operation, you know, a psyops operation. It's just weird that it just so happens that around this time, when a couple of guys who are running for office want to say, bring this narrative back in, oh, we're going to restore law and order, that now, you know, law and order is always at the hands of the police, and now we're finding police are being killed, and now that definitely means that there's no law and order. And so now we have to get this back under grips. We're back in 1980 with Reagan, and you know, can you be tough on crime? And tough on crime seems to have spawned the Democrats pushing, yeah, we can be tough on crime, so that's not to look weak. And then you get the tough on crime response from the Clintons, which push a bunch of black people and other people into jail, trying to prove they can be tough on crime. So here we are again. Here we are again. And unfortunately, no one has said up front, listen, when the only thing that, you know, this country's been very fortunate to not have had the reprisal from its black population in kind based on how it's been treated for so long. And now that you've seen acts of two, you act like this just kind of wasn't inevitable. But yet, the simple thing you could fix is just not that simple to fix, because it's so internal, the hate they operate from. They won't even recognize how they are driving themselves off the cliff. I'm sorry, go ahead, Byron.
Yeah, there are quite a few people that would like to see us reprised. You got to remember, Ethan, we don't have any soldiers. The one or two people that act out like this, we don't have any soldiers, and there are elements in this society that would like us to reprise violently. I don't think that's a wise strategy at all. But let me just say this. You use the term law and order, and I think Eutrice brings this out all the time in her shows and in her presentations. They really want order. Law is way down on the list. order. They want us to be consumers. They want us to be voters. I often hear you three say, what are Bernie Sanders going to do handing over the voters? Well, that's assuming that the voters don't have a mind of their own. Some voters are going to go to the Democratic Party, but others are going to sit it out or vote for a third-party person. They're not going to vote for Hillary. This is all mind control that's going on. That's what I see. I don't really trust these false flag operations that I hear going on in the news media. I don't trust them, and I'm not saying these people didn't actually commit the acts, but always there's a second or third or fourth person, and then the next day you don't hear about that person. They disappear from the scene. This happens overseas too, by the way. This happened in the two Paris attacks. It has happened in other attacks where you have these three or four people or one person or two people acting out in a dish. Like the instance with the guy with the truck in Nice, there were two people originally. All the reports were that there were two people and one got away. Then it wound up being just one person. And you didn't hear about that one person anymore, about the second person anymore. That was the end of it. I don't trust the scope of the news.
I have to ask both of you, Byron and Ethan, you have a pretty good handle. It sounds like you have a pretty good handle on how you interpret the reality that we're living in. Where do you place, or do you place any responsibility or any the onus on individuals such as yourself and me, yourselves, I should say, and me, to apply some of what we have learned to what you think you ought to be done at this time? Do you have anything to say about that?
Ethan, you can go first.
Oh, man, okay. Yes, we do. We do. I was not endorsing any retaliation or making that a cause of action, just to be clear. I wasn't saying that. That's how it sounded. What are we to do? Oh, wow. We would have to stop being afraid of, well, we can leave that sentence alone right then. And then stop being afraid of this in terms of voting for the lesser of two evils. If your vote is going to mean anything, and then outside of the vote, that's one part of participation. The other side of this, you know, yeah, calling us to band together. I would like to see a discourse, an action plan on, just this morning I was thinking about Fox. I happened to look at Fox. I turned it on and I said, you know, that level of rhetoric is, and none of the stations are really, absolved of it, but that level of rhetoric where they go with it, I was wondering, wow, you know, we turn on Fox Sports and watch the football game and all this kind of stuff, and I'm like, you know, I'm sorry, my brain's a little late. I was like, what would happen if that station that makes so much money off of football, which is made up of, majority of black men, if they were like, we're not doing this game on this station anymore, you know, that's a financial punch. So it goes back to now dealing with financial manipulation of who we allow to make money off of us and what are we willing to sacrifice. So I think once we stop being afraid to die, then we become more willing to maneuver ourselves into adjusting our lives so that we don't constantly, as they say, finance our own oppression. And I think taking our mindset that we have to, move away from our whatever level of comfortability we have and start to make, sacrifices in terms of how we direct our dollars, how we and how we, because it, like you said, we're not going to go to blows toe-to-toe. That's not going to work that way. So it's going to work a different way. And basically a financial plan has to be in place, I would think, that's the only, you know, other than, you know, my faith in God and me seeing things play out a different way, but in terms of, you know, an earthly maneuver, that's as good as I have at the moment. And I'll add this. I don't think it's strictly limited to us. I think that the argument that this is a black and white thing, I think there are plenty of white people out there who also don't like what is happening. And so, and the move of the people who are the power elite in that structure, they have pitted poor people against each other. So, again, the discussion about what's good for America lies in us having our own discussion amongst ourselves and not listening to what the pundits are telling us to be thinking about. And be thinking about, well, what's good for us? And why don't we put the push and the pressure on creating, on re-manipulating this, on manipulating the system for our benefit with a collective thinking about just what is better for us as a people.
Okay, right. Can I weigh in?
Yes.
Okay, the main reason I called here today, Eutrice, normally I listen to you every day. Normally I don't get a chance to call. I'm not working today, so I had an opportunity. And this is what I want to say to you and Ethan. I know I'm going to get rocks and slings and arrows from the PRN audience that call, but this is the main reason why one of the reasons why I called in. I'm voting for Hillary this time around, not because I agree with her and I know all the things that you guys say. I believe it to be true about Hillary. However, this is why I'm voting for Hillary. I believe that were Trump to get into office, it would be 3 or 4 times worse than Hillary being in office for this reason alone. The disposition and the attitude of the people voting for Trump, and I noticed it among police department, I noticed it among some of my white brethren, co-workers, not a lot of people I come in contact that are white. They seem to be anti-Trump also, especially here in New York City. But a lot of people, it doesn't matter. Trump can do no wrong. Like he said, he could walk out on Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and the people who vote for him would still vote for him. That's a very dangerous precedent of people that are supporting him. And I said that to say this. Hillary might do bad damage with her foreign policy and overseas, but I believe at least as bad as things are here, they won't get much, much worse here as far as race relations. They're horrible here, no doubt, but they would get 3 times, 4 times worse. We would have people in the streets being dragged out of their homes, turning on each other. I think it would be really bad for Trump to get in. So because I haven't been as active, and this gets to my original point, as active as I should be when I know better, reading and knowing what Garvey has said and Malcolm and Martin and what all those people gave us the roadmap, and watching what has happened amongst the gay community, the LGBT community, watching how Jews and Asians operate, how they organize. Yeah, they may need to protest outwardly, but they do a lot of work behind the scenes using legal strategy, and that's something I hear all Mattis talk about all the time. I'm going to devote myself from here forward using any means necessary, whether communicating with people who I know or getting involved with organizations that are down with organizing and getting legal strategies so that we can become full-fledged citizens, which we are not in this society. African-Americans are not considered citizens, and the people who shoot us down in the streets and the people who protect them, quietly, they would never say it publicly, Eutrice, but they quietly believe the same thing, that we were brought over here as chattel slaves. We were never meant to have our full citizenship. Be glad for the few crumbs you gave us. You let us ride on buses and become consumers and get these little jobs and these degrees, but we were never meant to be citizens. And if life is worth living at all, that's what we need to be striving for. And it may take time. It's not going to happen in one election cycle.
Well, I want to thank you, Ethan and Byron, for getting us started in such a vigorous way today. I thoroughly enjoyed taking instruction from what it is you had to say today. Thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much. So we pair up Julie from New York and Randolph from Montreal next. Julie, what have you to say?
Well, I disagree with the person that just called. I posted an article last week on Facebook. It was written by Eddie Glaude, who is chairman of the African American Studies at Princeton, and it was in Time magazine. It said, the article was, "My Democratic Problem with Voting for Hillary Clinton." And, of course, I got a lot of stones thrown at me for saying that, but I think it's more important than ever to take advantage of those 13 million votes, and you've spoken a lot about clarity, and I believe that we need to make I believe that we need to use the efforts that we've made thus far, and that anyone that shared Bernie's vision, I believe, would have to look at Jill Stein and the Green Party and realize that we can use that in terms of developing, in terms of having another party. A lot of people talk about starting another party, but we already have another party. There's a Green Party, and if 9 million of the 13 million supported Jill Stein, then that would make a statement to the Democratic Party, I believe. So even though I received a lot of negative comments about the article that I posted, I believe that we need to have clarity about the situation, and that if we believed in Bernie's vision, that we would see how close Jill Stein is to that. In fact, she's a lot more progressive in many ways. So I disagree with the other caller and his reason for voting for Hillary.
Randolph from Montreal, meet Julie from New York. What do you think about what Julie just said?
I was wanting to talk about the police, so I really can't comment on what she said. That sounds reasonable.
Oh, somebody's phone. Somebody has a message. Oh, call waiting.
Okay.
Would that be Randolph?
No, I'm okay.
Okay.
I don't have...
But continue.
Okay, what I was trying to say, what I would like to say is, just because somebody puts a metal-plated badge on somebody's hip and gives them instruments of murder on their hip, doesn't bring them wisdom. Until there is a financial disadvantage. Okay, as long as there's not a disadvantage for police who act and carry out acts against civil rights and freedoms, nothing will change. There has to be some type of act which will penalize these kinds of action, which everybody understands is against humanity. And we hear a lot about police and how dangerous their work is, how absolutely they must be coddled and protected. Well, what about all the draftees who have to go to war? They see and feel more in one day than police feel in their entire lifetimes. So I think that there has to be some type of balance here, that police want to be called officers, but they forget that there's a second word after that, officers, and that's peace, or at the beginning of it, peace officers. They shouldn't make the situation more violent and dangerous and brutal than it already is. They should have to try to act in a much more sensible manner. But no, violence is always their first and final solution to any problem.
But in recognition of what you've just said, do you believe that this is so pervasive that there could be a generalization about it? Or do you think that some instances in which police have gone over the edge have now become, in terms of how it's portrayed, have now become typical examples of how the police behave. Do you think that, there has been an over-exaggeration of the way that police behave very aggressively and in manners that, threaten life and limb in certain communities? Or do you think too much is being made of that and it's distorting the reality of how police actually do function?
Yes, that is correct. I think there is a pervasive feeling by people now, whenever they see police, that there is a danger. They're no longer rational, no longer reasonable, but just if anything is amiss, they utilize as much violence and fear as they can get away with. And so that's why, even if the majority of the police are not agreeing with this type of action, they should take the action to arrest and at least stop and arrest police who are exceeding reasonable and sensible actions. So if they don't do it, then they're just as culpable as the person who's doing that action.
Jason from Mount Vernon, meet Randolph of Montreal and Julie from New York.
Hello,
I want to ask you, Jason, what do you think of what Randolph just said about police and our perception about police?
Well, his grace and his oration verbally on the radio, it wasn't as great to have a segue out of a phenomenal conversation into the police misconduct, the odious behavior, but I do give him an Academy Award for his comments.
I don't understand.
Thank you.
Well, he made some excellent points, but his segue was kind of awkward.
We're not rating people on their segue. We're rating on the content of what they're saying. So on the content of what Randolph just offered, do you have any agreement or disagreement with what he has said?
Indeed I do. Peace officer is the key word. And that's the problem that we have now with our law enforcement, that they somehow have amnesia or have the willfully forgotten what that part meant in their federal, state codes of civil procedure, and also in their criminal procedure, in their manual of guidebook when they go through the training and they have to adhere to all throughout their employment with the law enforcement. Second, the whole issue of Blue Lives Matter is an oxymoron on so many levels that I don't want to even get into. The question is, if all lives matter, then why are the law enforcement, who forgot there are peace officers, but who insist on having us recognize them as officers, are behaving in such a manner where they're executing people on the street, and the media is only allowing you to spoon-feed you the so-called blacks being killed? They're not spoon-feeding you the Caucasians and Europeans and the Hispanics and Mexicans as much as they do spoon-feed us the people of dark color, people of dark skin, those who are African-American, those who have their identity misidentified, their identity stolen, their birthright theft taken away, and then forced to live in slave labor, tax evasion, adhesion.
But why is, in your view, why is the African-American community singled out for this kind of propaganda?
To get to the raw deal, and this is cannot be debatable, is that we have been given the short end of the stick because of two or three different dualities, or as you like to say, in the duopoly. Like I told you on Friday, if I may, just briefly, just one sentence, is that there's an orchestrated effort where every 4 years, there's a distraction. And this distraction is the circus of the campaign and the political process. Now, I said Donald Trump hijacked the Republican Party, tore it to shreds, and using the tools of outright bigotry and the tools of polarization. And on the other hand of the spectrum of the body politic, in this duopoly, like that word that you coined, we have Clinton and Bernie. And Bernie, of course, brought in the slam dunk, the nail on the coffin's head, the destruction of the Republican Party. There's 12 million, if not 20 million, people who are disenfranchised, despondent, discouraged, disillusioned, who would never have voted for Clinton, who are now really are forced to, because there's no other alternative. Now, Bernie Sanders, as honorable as he is, he played a role of hijacking a particular segment of the Democratic Party, who are, just like I mentioned, the young, the millennials, a lot of millennials, a lot of the older people who are, of course, of a particular age, who lived through the flower child generation, those who actually are very liberal, progressive, highly enlightened and intelligent, a diaspora of all different ethnic groups, particularly of those who are of the high echelons of the Jewish culture and African Americans, and those who are Hispanics and some of the Hollywood crowd. So that's part of the whole racket there. So
Randolph, I want to ask, is anything that Jason from Mount Vernon is saying making sense to you?
Yes, it makes sense. And I just add, what would the world be like if, say, Ralph Nader? Why is it that the best are killed and the rest are to bought off? Why is it that the best people, the best that they have, as long as there's a feeling that you can do whatever you want just as long as you're not effective? The moment you become effective, then all these agencies are after you. And if you survive, you'll be lucky. So why is it that the world would have been far better, I believe, if a person like Ralph Nader, a more humane and decent person who doesn't have all this baggage that these, and baggage is putting it very mildly, that these other people who are flocked, they flock to him because they have such media attention. What is it about people that decent people who could make a difference for the better just never get anywhere? Why is it?
Excellent question, and something that we need to continue to talk about. But I want to thank you, Randolph from Montreal, and Jason from Mount Vernon, for engaging us in this discussion today and for bringing these ideas to our attention for continued discussion and debate. Thank you so much for being with us today. Marvin from New York, hello. Is Marvin there? Okay, so we lost Marvin, or we haven't hooked up with Marvin. Frank from Philly, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Utrecht.
Hello.
Hello, Utrecht, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good to speak with you.
Thank you, same here.
You said one thing last week that I thought was very pertinent. And that was, you said, regarding all the police violence, that there's definitely been an escalation. Escalation is the word you used?
Yes.
And I would agree with that. And also, I'm puzzled by the fear of Trump, the absolute paranoia that they would vote for somebody like Hillary when Trump had nothing to do with the present police escalation of violence, because Barack Obama's been in office, and it's been a year now. I mean, we've had Ferguson, we've had all these different things. So while I'm not advocating voting for Trump, In fact, to me, it seems as though, and this is my own not my own personal opinion, Bruce Dixon wrote an article about it last year when he said that, in fact, Bernie Sanders is sheepdogging for Hillary. And I also believe that Donald Trump is sheepdogging for Hillary. I mean, there is no sane human being could vote for the man. I understand that he's got a lot of people, you know, that probably aren't too discerning or particularly intelligent who are all for him. But just the things that come out of his mouth,
you're presuming things. There are lots of very, very intelligent people who absolutely identify with Donald Trump. We cannot assume that because people, they vote for Donald Trump, that somehow they're not intelligent. They're quite intelligent.
Oh, okay.
It's just that they have an entirely different orientation, perhaps. But I want you to meet Marvin from New York. Hello, Marvin. You should meet Frank from Philly.
Hello?
Are we?
I'm here.
Yes, Marvin, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Oh, okay.
Yes,
meet Frank from Philly. And we're talking about this dilemma that we seem to have, which impacts on systems that control us, including law enforcement, where the presumptive nominee for either of the parties or for both parties will soon be squaring off against each other, and one of them will prevail as President of the United States. What does that have to do with the question of police brutality? I'm asking you.
You're asking Marvin.
Hello,
Frank.
Marvin.
Yes. I'm not sure what you're asking me. Could you ask me again?
Well, how do you link the election to the situation, the crisis? It seems to be a crisis with regard to law enforcement.
Okay. Yeah. Based on my experience as an African American and an educator, I think that if this has anything to do with the election, that it's just bringing out something that's always existed. I mean, my parents have always told me about this police brutality that I've experienced it. And quite frankly, I think it's a distraction. And also, as far as Hillary and Donald Trump are concerned, I think that because of the way the world is and society is moving, because I have been experienced with teaching and I graduated, have a master's in multicultural education, that if there is a Donald, then that's what it's supposed to be. And then our reaction is what our reaction should be, which probably reflects that of the 60s and the 50s. And we have to use a different approach, because it's going to exist. The state of the climate of the United States is going to exist, whether that's Donald or Hillary. I think the people need to realize that. Well, African Americans already realize that, but we need to have the debate with the poor white and African Americans, and everybody's avoiding that debate, and that is slavery and the effect of the African American and the effect of poor white and the end result.
Frank, what do you say?
You know, I agree with him that everybody's avoiding the conversation about race. Sure, of course they are. But at the same time, what we're also avoiding is the fact that, as you said, there's been an escalation. Sure, there's always been violence against the black population from the police. Absolutely. But the thing is, the reason for the escalation, I believe, is because over the past 10 years or so, our police departments have been going overseas to, like, Israel, for instance, for new tactics. The Israelis have the Palestinians to experiment on as far as new weaponry and all that sort of thing goes. And don't forget also that, you know, since, you know, this thing where they have access to our email, our phone conversations, our texts, everything, they can, and I don't know if they're currently listening or not, but they can put the whole country under control. I think at this point, whenever they choose to, you know. So, I just think it's going to, I don't think that it matters whether it's Trump or Hillary, because the powers that be, for instance, you saw them at the AIPAC conference. They were both received warmly. And when you see what the countries in Europe are doing and that they have to deal with the Israeli lobby, I don't know. I think that it's pretty obvious what's going on, you know?
So, Marvin, if it's this obvious, how come you're not getting it?
Oh, I do get it. I agree with him 100%.
Okay. All right.
1,000%, but I'm seeing basically from the people that I come across, professionals that, you know, mostly in the field that I'm working in, or white males and females, and then the white males that I do talk to about politics are saying, yeah, I'm probably going to vote for Trump because he's going to take care of things. He's going to get things done, you know. But, you know, at the same time, politically speaking for myself, I go back and forth with whether or not I'm going to vote for Hillary or the Green Party, because right now I don't think any one of them have been doing anything for me. I've been out getting myself together, going to college, graduating college, raising kids, raising grandkids, and the fact is we don't have a say in it. And then I've been reading a lot about this TPP or this other policy that they have put on the back burner, but eventually it's going to pass, and it's going to be passed just the same way they pass contracts in my union. It's going to be on the back page, and people are going to get an enormous raise, and then all of a sudden they're going to go, oh, wait, I didn't vote for that. I voted for the raise. I mean, it's just the way America is, and I hope and pray that my kids can have a successful life like I did, ducking and dodging bullets.
So, Frank, is there some kind of thinking that we ought to have right now in the middle of all of this that is happening? Is there some kind of a consciousness that ought to be developing, you think?
Yes, thank you. There is. And that consciousness is this, that in the confusion, in the chaos that will continue to grow in this country, you know, with more police violence and everything, and who knows when the National Guard gets involved, like that was who got involved in Ferguson, right? When all this happens, that causes the chaos and confusion. Think about all the countries in the Middle East where we've caused chaos and confusion and we've made into failed states, you know? Think about that. And think about how power grows like a cancer, like metastasizes in confusion, okay? That is what I think is the main priority. I think our main priority is... Our main priority is to watch the police and military, and also to be very concerned about our foreign policy. I just want to make one quick point. The other caller just mentioned about how he talks to people and they just don't seem conscious. So many people have told me Elizabeth Warren, how progressive and what a wonderful vice president. Her site, her website has been up for like 4 years, whatever it was that she started running for senator, okay? You go to the foreign policy page, she's a war hawk, pure and simple. She's all praise for the military. The men in her family served in the military. She's all for Israel. Her state has some, you know, works with Israel or something like that. You know, and Israel's a country, it needs to be protected, and she values the relationship with Israel. So it's like, how is this woman a progressive? Because she cares about, you know, extra fees on credit cards that we pay, or she might... you know, voice some concern about, you know, these trade treaties or whatever that are going to go through anyway. To me, that's it. Our foreign policy is really, if all our resources are going to fight wars, how are we going to do simple things like health care or whatever it is that the people need? We're not going to be able to do it. So if her or Bernie Sanders are promising, well, we need jobs, jobs, and more jobs, how are we going to get them if they've been sent? It took 30 years to dismantle this country's manufacturing base, You know, how is it that we're going to reassemble it in 4 or 8 years where people are actually working again? I'm a senior. I'm older than you. I remember.
I didn't think anybody was older than me.
Yeah, well, you have your date on the website. That's why I said that. But also, I can remember when I was out of high school, the choices were, I mean, there was a lot of choices. I mean, I didn't think, oh, we're so lucky because I can get a job. You know, I didn't want to work particularly. I mean, I wasn't particularly ambitious. But I'm just saying, you know, it has changed, and over the years, it took a while to do it. And it's going to take a while to bring it back to anything decent, regardless of, I mean, even with the best intentions in the world, it's going to take a long time.
Well, Frank from Philly and Marvin from New York, you've given us so much to think about today, and I thank you so much for sharing so generously your thoughts. And this is what we need to do, just talking. And you see how much information in this 1 hour, how many different points of view that we have, all of which I believe are quite legitimate and worthy of consideration. So I want to thank you for calling and contributing. And that brings us to the end of our program today. I can't tell you how proud I am always when the forum is opened up and we operate like exactly like this, where we understand it's not about showboating. It is about really getting to the root of things, which is what the word radical is all about. You get to the root of things. And I thank you so much, all of you, for contributing at such a high level. Thank you. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. Wonderful program. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. And as always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We continue the discussion tomorrow. Bye-bye.